The National Association of Pea Farmers declared today that they are the last line of defense in preventing peas from running wild everywhere, and that without their discipline and vigilance, peas and their powerful vines would choke all other life out of the entire planet Earth. NAPF President Joel Karras.
If it wasn't for our constant picking and canning, this world would be ruled by peas.
The pea farmers went on to warn government officials that without a massive increase in subsidies, next year's pea crop will crush us all.
Hey, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. I know, I'm as shocked as you are to hear me say that again. It's a very long story, and I'm not even going to begin to tell you right now because we have a very special guest calling in here in about 5 minutes. This one fell into my lap, but you should know that I had a show in the works. The material's already been done, actually. Just need to record this. There will be another show piggybacking this one shortly, trust me. And I'll explain everything later, but I'm glad to be back. And I'm happy to have you join me here today. I'll make it short because we have business to tend to here. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. The world is pretty screwed up right now. I mean, it's a shitstorm of epic proportions out there. We have a president that most people don't want. There's a threat of a huge war, larger than what's going on with ISIS. Countries are pissed off at us. America's divided. We've got people punching each other over politics. We have police abuse problems still, along with a host of other issues that still plague us. I need a break. We all need a break. Before, and I mean back when I was dealing with cancer, I'd go run or something. I'd run away from my problems. And that hour or two when I was out was a nice break. But when I came back, I still had that problem. And now, I don't care how long I run away from these problems, they're still there, and they still haunt me. I needed a safe place, a safe haven. And guess what that safe haven was? Food. This show, to be exact, but food. You know, whether it was an article in a magazine, a food or travel show, a movie, if it was about food, cooking, getting back into the kitchen, and ultimately in front of this microphone, that was and is the escape that I need to reset everything. So here I am. And today, we're talking with Chef Judy Ju. She's a Korean-American chef who is just super passionate about what she's doing. And you all know my love of Korean food. I've featured it about as many times as I've featured French cuisine on the show. In the very first season, in fact, I introduced Korean food. Episode 7, I think. Bulgogi, kimchi, and soju. And that was, for the most part, all I thought there really was to it. But it went way beyond that. And the more I learned about Korean cuisine, the more I fell in love with it. It's humble. It's comforting. It's communal. The banchan on the table, little plates of side dishes that the entire family shares, the stews, the nuclear hot chili pepper that coats everything. Although, maybe I shouldn't be saying nuclear right now. Ass-piercing hot pepper. How's that? It's getting increasingly more popular. 10, 15 years ago, you had to really be in the right location to have access to this food, but it seems to be far more accessible now. In fact, and this came as a shock even to me, my Apple News feed is full of articles on outdoor recreation, and I came across this review of a company that put out a line of ready-made meals for backpackers, these foil pouches with dehydrated food in them. It's like MREs that the military, you know, they give the soldiers to eat when they're out in the field. All you do is basically add hot water, stir it up, and eat it right out of the bag. I mean, it's disgusting, really. But when you're hiking in the mountains for a week, you'll eat a corpse. You know, you'll eat anything. You'd eat a shoe with cheese on it. You're so hungry. Anyway, usually it's beef stroganoff, mac and cheese, maybe pasta and meatballs that taste nothing like meatballs. But this company featured bibimbap, which is a popular Korean rice dish that has vegetables and meat and like a fried egg on top. And as odd as this may sound, I think when your country's cuisine makes it into the dehydrated food market for backpackers, I think you know you've truly made it. But Chef Ju's story is a rarity, and this outside of having her here to talk about what she's doing and share some recipes is kind of a two-part thing. There's a story here that I see far too often that misguides some people. What's happening with Chef Ju does not happen a lot, and people who want to become chefs and get into the world of working in restaurants don't usually have this in their sights. But a lot of people do. Almost every time I've had a celebrity chef on this show, I've gotten responses that they're inspired to become a chef. And why is that? Fame. People are fame whores. They want to be on television. They want to become rich and famous. They want to be a Kardashian. And that's the wrong reason to get into this business. The hours are long. You're on your feet all day. The emotional and physical toll it takes on your body is brutal. This is about passion. And if you have a head for business and the drive to go further than just work in a kitchen, you can certainly take it there. But if that's your end game, it's short-sighted. And I wanted to make a comparison, if I may, to the NBA. So you've got this kid who's incredibly talented and passionate about basketball, plays in high school, and has a dream of playing in the NBA. Only 3 out of 10,000 high school players end up getting drafted and playing in the NBA, and some of those don't make it past, say, Summer League. They ran the numbers on this not long ago. 545,844 high school basketball players. Of that number, 17,500 went into college and played college ball. Of that number, 17,500, only 48 players got drafted. You break it down into percentages. Players that make the jump from high school to college, 2.9%. The players that make that jump from college to pro, 1.3%. And then players that make a jump from high school to pro, 0.03%. Now, I don't know what the stats would look like if they actually did this in the world of professional cooking, but I think it would either be similar or worse. But here's the path that Judy took. She received a bachelor's degree at Columbia University, started a career in finance at Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, became so enamored with the diverse food culture that they have in New York, she was working on Wall Street, she decided to ditch the world of finance to attend the French Culinary Institute, where she graduated at the top of her class. She then worked at Savoir Magazine's Test Kitchen, developed recipes, did some writing, things like that, then moved to London, did stages at a couple of small restaurants you may have heard of, the Fat Duck and the French Laundry, then started working at a bunch of Gordon Ramsay's restaurants. A couple of years later, she competes on Iron Chef UK and wins it. And before you know it, she's a resident judge on the next Iron Chef and Iron Chef America. She followed that up by getting her own cooking show on the Cooking Channel and then Food Network. Before you know it, she's opening her own Korean restaurant, Jinju, in London. In the same year, she opened a second one in Hong Kong, follows that up by a third restaurant again in London. So three restaurants. She's written a book, Korean Food Made Simple, the same name as her show on Food Network. And now she has three meal kits available on chef.com that you can order and cook Judy's food right in your own kitchen. Oh, and she's got a spice line in the works too, I'm hearing. I mean, come on. If this isn't a chef success story, I haven't heard one. No one outside of a crazy person gives up a career on Wall Street to go to culinary school. That's passion, drive, vision. It's nuts, that's what it is. But that's what Chef Judy Ju did. She's pretty amazing. She's Chef Judy Ju, and she's on My Life as a Foodie. Judy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I've already given my audience your resume, but let me run through it briefly with you. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is the path you took. You received your bachelor's degree at Columbia University and started a career in finance. You worked at Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, worked on Wall Street. Then you decided, after a few years, I want to become a chef. So you went to French Culinary Institute and graduated at the top of your class. Then you worked at Savoir Magazine, moved to London, and then did stages at a couple of small restaurants they may have heard of, the Fat Duck and the French Laundry. Worked for the Gordon Ramsay Group, and then decides it's time for TV.
Yeah.
You competed on Iron Chef UK and won it.
I am an Iron Chef, so I was one of the four that were picked to be on the show. Yeah. And then I competed against other chefs. Yeah.
Right. And then became a resident judge on the next Iron Chef and Iron Chef America. You followed that up by getting your own cooking show on the Cooking Channel of Food Network.
Exactly.
And then you opened three restaurants. Jinju, am I pronouncing that right?
Yep, Jinju, yep.
You have two in London, one in Hong Kong.
Correct.
You've written a cookbook, Korean Food Made Simple.
Yep.
And you have three meal kits available on chef.com, so people can cook your food right in their own kitchen. And I hear you have a spice line in the works. Did I get all that right?
Yep, that's true. That's true.
Judy, if you don't mind me, if you don't mind me saying so, you're kind of a big deal.
not really. There are a lot of people doing what I do. It's just part of the job. I would have to say.
Let me go back a bit here.
You
grew up in your mom's kitchen, surrounded by South Korean cuisine. Was that drive to become a chef always there for you? Did you somehow think that you'd be doing this someday?
Oh my God, no. No, not at all. cooking was never a career option for me in my family. I come from a family of mainly doctors, and so, that was kind of instilled upon me at a very early age that, you had to go to a certain school, you had to have a certain profession, you went into certain industries, I guess, like the stereotypical, tiger mother upbringing, if you will. Piano lessons, you have to go to a certain school, all of this stuff. And so being a chef was never really part of that fabric of my upbringing. And so I never thought in a million years that I would be doing what I'm doing today, ever.
Well, you have quite a success story, and I'm no one to step on anyone's dreams, but I told my audience, this is not something that happens to every chef or even most students who attend culinary school. And I know that a lot of people get into this business because they want to become a Food Network celebrity. What would you say to someone who gets into this profession with that goal?
It's very hard. It's kind of like trying to become a professional athlete. There are so few spaces, and obviously becoming a professional athlete is even more competitive, but it's really difficult, and you have to work so hard to get there. It's not that glamorous. It's a lot of, blood, sweat, and tears, as I say. And, you have to be willing to put in the hours, put in the work. And I think that, particularly with the millennials of this day and age, people and young people are starting to forget how much hard work it actually entails. Yes, we're in the era of where you can become a reality star just off of YouTube, but at the end of the day, you do have to have a specialty, you do have to know your trade, you do have to work hard at it in order to have longevity.
When you mentioned becoming an athlete, I ran a stat on how many high school basketball players play in any specific year, and how few of those actually become, get drafted into the NBA. It's like less than 1%. It's very, very low. So
yeah.
I didn't know what the stat was for chefs because they can't run a number like that. But yeah, funny. It's funny that you mentioned it.
It is hyper competitive. As you can think of all the restaurants in the world, or even just in New York City or wherever you live, think of how many chefs are in each of the restaurants, and every one of them supposedly has a dream and wants a TV show, and it's very difficult. It's really difficult. Yeah.
We've talked about
it's
this.
It's difficult to stand out. Yeah.
I'm sure. We've talked a lot about this on the show, that one of the greatest things about our country is the vast amount of culture that we have because of immigration. We're a nation of immigrants, mm-hmm. and because of that, we're rich in culture. I live in an area that's dense with South Korean Americans, and I have all... Yeah, I have all the ingredients at my disposal. I can make just about anything, but that's not the case everywhere, which is why I think what you've done by partnering with Chef.com is such a great thing. Would you like to share with our audience, with our audience maybe the meals that you have available for home delivery from Chef.com and how this whole thing, how it all works?
Yeah, so this is a really fun project, and I'm particularly happy about it. I find it particularly rewarding because it really brings my show and Crazy Food Made Simple to people's homes. Because, like you said, it is not always easy to find these ingredients. Although everything is pretty much available online now, you can get it delivered the next day. It's kind of incredible anywhere you live. But obviously, you know, not everybody shops online. And so, with these meal kits, you get everything portioned out for you. So you don't have to commit to a whole giant tub of gochujang, the Korean chili paste, or a whole giant tub of the doenjang, the fermented soybean paste. It comes exactly how many tablespoons you need, and then you really just have to throw it all together. You're going to have to do a bit of cooking, so chopping, cutting, slicing, whatever, and obviously you cook it, so everything is raw. So you still get the cooking experience, but it just takes out that hard elements, because the hardest thing about ethnic cuisine is the grocery shopping. And so once you remove that, then it becomes just like any other meal, which is fantastic. And so we've launched this with three different recipes at first. One is a classic beef bibimbap. The other one is one of the most popular recipes in my cookbook, which is Mom's Barbecue Chicken. And then the other one is late night naggi noodles. So they're all really easy, full of flavor, and gives you a little bit of an intro into Korean food.
Perfect. And we'll have links to the website. On the website, anybody who's interested in cooking Judy's dishes in the comfort of their own kitchen, chef.com. Judy, are you surprised at how mainstream Korean food has become now?
I am. I really am. I knew it was just a matter of time, but it's really becoming a trend and having its moment right now. You know, Korean food is ridiculously tasty. I think that's at the end of the day why it has become so incredibly popular. And it really does have its own unique taste, different than any other Asian cuisine out there. It's very different to Japanese food, Chinese food, Thai food, etc. So it does have its own unique identity, which is why I think people love it so much too. And it's very much having an in vogue zeitgeist moment right now.
I was telling a story earlier about, and this, it's just so funny that I'm an outside type of person. I like to hike and go backpacking. And one of my news feeds, I saw this article of this company that makes these dehydrated food kits, you know, for backpackers. It's a foil pouch that has dehydrated food and you pour hot water and it's a meal. I found one for bibimbap. Is it bibimbap?
Oh, amazing.
Right?
Yeah, bibimbap.
And
yeah,
in a strange way, and don't take this wrong, but I think that once your food makes it into the dehydrated food market for backpackers, you've truly made it.
You've made it. Yeah, that's true. That's amazing. Yeah. The kind of dehydrated kimchi too, now, I hope.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, that would be taking it one more step further. Let's talk a little bit. I want to talk about your book, Korean Food Made Simple. Was your point in writing this book just to show how approachable this cuisine is in a home kitchen?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So that's my whole goal and my ethos behind my book and my show is that I really wanted to make Korean food accessible and welcoming to everyone. And it's not some mystical, mysterious thing that is super hard to make. It really is pretty easy. And literally just with a few Korean ingredients, that's all you need. And then you can pretty much make the entire book. and it's just a matter of like the fermented paste and a few chili flakes and the rest of the stuff you can buy in regular grocery stores these days. Things like soy sauce, sesame oil, sesame seeds, mirin. And I really wanted to make it approachable for everyone. And you'll see in the book that there are a lot of fusion recipes also. So my whole philosophy also is that you don't have to have things be 100% authentic. I'd like to fuse. I like to mix flavors. And I think that Korean flavors meld beautifully with other Western cuisine, particularly desserts. I even have a chapter in there on bread. Obviously, bread is not traditional in Korea, but you know, I've made a kimchi bacon brioche and made some samjang, which is a spicy sauce, and puff pastry straws, and fun things like that. And even things like a Philly cheesesteak that's been, you know, jazzed up with Korean spices, and buffalo wings that use gochujang instead of hot sauce, and all of these different things. So it's really approachable. It's super easy. And you know, my goal is really that if somebody in Nebraska or somewhere starts using gochujang or doenjang or gochugaru. That is my goal, is just kind of to bring Korean food, even if it's just one ingredient, to the masses.
Yeah, it's a great idea, including and taking it to a next level, making something normal or somewhat American, like a Philly cheesesteak sandwich, and adding Korean ingredients to it. That's brilliant.
It's fun. Yeah, that's actually a really good recipe. When I made that on set video, camera crew went nuts for it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, for someone who's never explored Korean cooking before, what would be the first dish that you would recommend someone trying at home?
Oh, definitely my mom's barbecue chicken. Yeah, that is so easy and so incredibly tasty. And it's been the surprise hit of the book. People have been writing in saying that they're using that marinade on top of everything. Their kids love it. They're throwing it on top of vegetables, fish, meat, rice, etc. to kind of like the all to like a master sauce, I guess. And it's absolutely fantastic on chicken. And at the end of the day, it's this barbecue chicken, which everyone loves. So it's very easy for people to kind of pick up that recipe and make it and serve it without it being too foreign. And even your kids will eat it. Yeah.
So the barbecue chicken that your mom makes, is that the one dish that when you eat takes you back to your childhood?
No, actually, probably the one thing that my mom used to make for me that really takes me back to my childhood is probably like a rice porridge that she used to make for me every day after school. And it's just kind of like water and rice with chicken stock and some, you know, few bits of meat and some scallions on top. And it was just like my after school snack. So whenever I have that, it just kind of makes me feel cozy. Like, I'm back home. Yay, I'm with my mom.
Right. Like that scene, like the scene in Ratatouille. Same thing, right?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, Judy, can I ask you a question? How critical of your cooking was your mother when you started this?
Oh, not really, actually. Like, my mom is, her cooking is really traditional. And, you know, and the food that I do, particularly at Jinju, is quite modern and it looks modern. You know, we take a lot of pride in plating and, you know, making everything look really beautiful and accessible. So, you know, they're obviously critical, but at the same time, like when my parents come to Jinju, they're like, where's the Korean food? They like, don't understand it quite.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've told these stories on my show before. My mother was a hit and miss cook. I mean, I love the woman, but she could burn a salad, you know. As I got into cooking, she was incredibly critical of my food, and I'm not a professional chef. But when I finally started to impress her, it was a big deal for me. Did you feel that same thing?
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, she's not really that critical. She just likes it. Yeah. She's just like, oh, it's tasty. You know, she's not like a food Nazi or anything like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Okay, and so I hear, I'm not sure if you want to mention this or not, you have a spice line in the works. Is that true?
Yes, I do. Hopefully that'll be coming out soon in the next few months. So that's being made out of Belgium, actually, with this amazing company that's quite small and run by this guy. And he's literally, I think he's got a similar background to me. I think he used to be a lawyer or something, and then he quit because he decided he just loved spices and he just wanted to travel the world to find the best spice suppliers and the best little grandmas who grow the most amazing saffron or whatever. And he's this insanely passionate man, and he's so fun, and he wanted to do a Korean spice line. So I've got five different spices coming out, with spice mixes that you can just put with, you know, beef, pork, fish, a panko breading one, and it's super easy. You know, dry spices are always a lot easier in terms of purchasing because their shelf lives are a lot longer. You don't feel like you're buying like a huge bottle of some weird sauce that after you make this Thai dish once or whatever or this Indian dish once, and you have this in your refrigerator for months and months to come. It's a really easy way to introduce some Korean flavors into people's pantries.
Will there be recipe suggestions or recipes that come with the spices?
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. So we're working on that too.
Well, people seem to have tunnel vision when they discover new cuisines. When you say Japanese food, they instantly think of sushi. With Vietnamese food, it's pho. When you mention Italian food, pasta and pizza. With Korean cuisine, it's usually barbecue and kimchi. What's the one Korean dish that gets less attention that you think might be the next big thing to go mainstream?
Well, Korean fried chicken, if that's not mainstream already. You know, everybody loves Korean fried chicken. It's super popular. But I would say bibimbap also.
That
rice bowl with all the different vegetables on top.
Right.
You know, people love that. That's one of my most popular dishes in the restaurant.
That's great. Now, obviously, it's all catching fire, and the fried chicken is fantastic. I've had it so many times.
Yeah.
Now, I can't even imagine how difficult it has to be for you to actually judge, on television no less, professional chefs at the height of their careers as they cook their asses off for an hour. Do you find it hard to look for criticisms in their food when you're judging on these shows?
Absolutely. And particularly something like Iron Chef, Superstar Chef, you know, where you have the best of the best of you know, America all cooking their heart out. You know, everything was just amazing, but you had to eliminate people. And it was very, very, very difficult. But, yeah, so it was, that season was, you know, I was almost like pinching myself. I was like, what right do I have to be here? You know, as a judge, you're like, literally judging like culinary idols, you know. That was interesting.
Right, because
it's quite an honor, actually.
I can imagine it's because it's not a show like Top Chef where you're judging young cooks. Some are sous chefs that don't even own a restaurant, and nowhere near the experience of the people that you're judging. So, and I'm sure it had to be very difficult.
Yes, it is, yeah.
When you were competing on Iron Chef, can you describe the pressure that you're under when you're doing that?
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, kind of, that show's so hard. Like, I kind of hate it. But it's like when you're drenched in sweat from head to toe by the end of that hour, and you do not get any extra time. You know, it really is filmed live, you know, to camera, taped live. You know, you think you're going to end up with 10 things on the plate, you get 4, you know, you just run out of time, you're working so messy, there's crap everywhere, it's just an insane show.
Always wondered if they actually did give you an hour, because it's
an hour.
Yeah, it's incredible that they're able to do, that you're able to do so much in an hour, where it would take all day for most people.
Yeah, well, you have 2 sous chefs, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that without 2 sous chefs, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you got 3 people, but it's still a lot, yeah.
Right.
It's definitely a hard work.
So your first restaurant, Jinju, am I pronouncing that right, Jinju?
Yeah, Jinju, it means pearl. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, right, okay. How did that come about? I mean, how did that whole thing get started?
You know what? It was a bit of luck. My now business partner just cold called me. He had my food somehow and had this lease and called me. He's like, you don't know me, but I got your number from so-and-so. I wanted to know if you wanted to do something, and the rest is history. That's literally,
Is it difficult to manage 3 restaurants, one of which is like literally 6,000 miles away from the other ones?
Yes, it's very hard. It is very hard. It is challenging in every sense of the word. It pulls in every single one of my skill sets. It is managerial, it's creative, it's business, it's finance. Gosh, I don't know. It's really, really difficult. I'm wearing a lot of different hats.
Judy, with all you have going on, I mean, I can hear it in your voice. Do you have time to sleep?
I need my sleep. I'm one of those people that I have to sleep. So I make the time to sleep. Because I'm just not a happy camper if I don't get.
I mean, you have a lot of irons in the fire.
At least 6 hours,
Yeah.
At least six hours of sleep. So, I need my sleep. I am definitely one of those people.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I would get a lot more done if I didn't have to sleep. But,
right, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Judy, I'm not going to keep you too much longer. I wanted to thank you for being on here today. It's kind of a monumental thing for the show.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I love doing podcasts, and especially ones that are a bit more cerebral.
Right.
And yeah, no, it's fantastic. So thank you so much for having me on, and thank you everybody for listening. And yeah, hopefully inspire somebody to change careers and follow their dream.
Yeah, it's nice. Judy, listen, I've had a lot of people say things about my show. It's never been called cerebral, so I appreciate that.
Well, you know, it's not just fluff, you know.
No, we try not to.
No, it's a little bit, more to the heart with, like, real stories and real people and, yeah, inspirational things.
That's awesome. Okay. Visit chef.com to purchase meal kits to make Judy's food at home. You can find her show, Korean Food Made Simple, on Food Network and the Cooking Channel. Cook her meals at home with her cookbook, Korean Food Made Simple. And if you happen to be in the neighborhood, visit one of her three restaurants in Hong Kong and London. Judy, you're an inspiration to young chefs everywhere to follow your dreams. Your passion and love of food is truly inspiring, and what you've accomplished is just incredible. So thank you again for being here today.
Thank you so much, Phil. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Take care.
What will happen probably will be this. The water you're receiving on your table will be cloudy because they cannot come up with a way to deliver good, clean water to every single American. But what will happen is that you are ordering a chicken salad. But maybe the chicken is cooked. The salad that goes and comes from another station will never be on time because nobody there to tell the Democrats in the room what the Republicans were doing. And at the end, that salad of chicken will never happen because why they should be working together. American politicians, it's always the blame game, the blame game, the blame game. In a restaurant, they will learn that actually we don't blame anybody. But we'll take responsibility for our own shortfalls and we will ask for help. They will see great Americans, many of them on the right, many of them on the left, Americans that work together towards feeding America. Our politicians, that's what they should be doing, feeding America hope. But somehow they are kind of in the business of not even bringing food to the table. I wish that the politicians would come upon the restaurants of America and see the teamwork that happens and bring something back with them.
Okay, so let's make one of Judy's dishes. I'm so hungry I could eat one of those dehydrated backpacking meals. We're going to make kimchi fried rice, which is about as simple as it gets, but freaking delicious. You will need the following, and if you can't keep up, I've put the recipe on the website. Super easy to follow. You start with 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 2 strips of bacon that you dice up. I told you Judy was cool. She uses bacon. 2 carrots, julienned and then coarsely chopped, 1 clove of grated garlic, 9 shiitake mushrooms. You remove the stems first and then slice them lengthwise into quarters, 1/2 of a zucchini, julienned and coarsely chopped, 3 green onions, finely sliced. You want to separate 2 on one side and leave 1 on the other side because you're going to use 1 for garnish, but chop them all super fine. 1 cup of kimchi that you want to chop into small pieces, 4 cups of cooked short grain rice, 1 teaspoon of salt, 8 grinds on the black pepper shaker, and 4 soft sunny side up fried eggs. The one thing you might not have or be able to find is Korean chili flakes. Go to Garu. If you can't find that, you can use red pepper flakes. You're just going to sprinkle that across the top depending on how hot you want this. Don't blow your ass out, but one of the best things I've ever heard about Korean food is that by the end of the evening, you're hosed drunk, sweating, and burping. And if that didn't happen, you had less of an experience. All right, start this dish. You want to heat the vegetable oil in a large skillet over medium-high heat and add the diced bacon and saute that until the edges are a little crispy, about 2 to 3 minutes. Use a slotted spoon to remove the bacon from the skillet and let it drain on kitchen towels or a paper towel. Reduce the heat to medium and add the carrots and the garlic to the skillet. You want to keep stirring this. Stir it constantly. You don't want anything to burn or stick to the plate. And cook it until the carrots are softened, about 2 to 3 minutes. Then mix in the mushrooms, the zucchini, two of the green onions and the kimchi and continue to saute that until tender, about 4 to 5 minutes. Now we'll return the bacon back into the pan, add the rice, and mix it all up to incorporate the rice well. Also with a wooden spoon, break up the rice, get it all mixed up. You want to season that with salt and pepper to taste, and then once it's done, transfer the rice into a serving plate or a platter, top with the fried eggs, and garnish with the remaining green onions, and sprinkle that with the Korean chili flakes and a couple cracks of the black pepper. This serves four. If you're cooking for two, just cut the ingredients in half and top each plate with a fried egg. From my experience, this is one of those dishes that is incredible as leftovers. So if you get smashed one night and you'll wake up feeling like you've been hit by a truck, nothing's going to cure a hangover like this dish for breakfast. Okay, great show. It was incredible having Judy on. It feels really good to be back. I appreciate you all for listening and hanging in there. Another show's in the works as I speak, like I mentioned, so we'll be back very soon. Don't forget to check the website out, mylifeasafoodie.com. I've got links to all of Judy's goodies on there. She reminds me of my sister-in-law, I swear. Sounds just like her, same mannerisms and everything. My sister-in-law is great, I'm telling you. The last one I had was a pain in the ass, so it's nice to have a redo in life every once in a while. Music in this episode by Sub Focus and Vo. So if you like the music, visit the website for links to purchase the songs. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Salute. My thoughts sickening, all venom, I'm lost in them. Ready for war, better pray that the Lord with them. My only focus, new vision, my new religion. Just you and vengeance, my new addiction. I don't feel no feelings, now you were dealing with a super villain. Ain't no holding back, I'm a maniac in the mood for killing. No more forgiveness, I owe you payback, I'm coming with it. I promise you my revenge, and I'm gon' get it. Got my mask on, wearing all black. Ain't no use to running, better fall back. It ain't over till it's over, there's no way back. I'm coming and I'm gunning, better stay strapped. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. Yeah, and I'm coming for it ASAP. I need it and I'm coming to take that. And it ain't a place that you safe at. You crazy, you know I don't play that. Vendetta on my mind like a sick pleasure. I'm the collector, you in debt to a win getter. Applying pressure, my endeavor will end never. You violated, it's time to take it to nth level. I'm a killing tool, an offending dude, it's a big error. A boxing match with a silver back would've been better. When I stick and move, I'm predictable with this chin checker. Till I get my tools, I'ma stick to you like a skin cancer. Got my mask on, wearing all black. Ain't no use to running, better fall back. It ain't over till it's over, there's no way back. I'm coming and I'm gunning, better stay strapped. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. I'm coming for payback. Yeah, and I'm coming for it.